If somebody wanted to make their own turbo cap, I would say buy a TIG welder. You can buy a good TIG welder that does AC/DC for $700. Buy a Harbor Freight bandsaw and a little table. Buy a Harbor Freight belt sander. You're good to go. If you ever plan on like turboing more in one vehicle, invest in those four parts. And in the two turbo kits that you build, you'll save your money.
Welcome to the Eat, Sleep, Race podcast. Today we have a fabricator who once upon a time was a ginger.
Yes, hence the name.
Hence the name. You probably know him on YouTube. He has over 700,000 subscribers on YouTube, mm-hmm. as well as over 100,000 followers on Instagram and TikTok.
Very
Ladies
nice.
And gentlemen, Caleb, a.k.a. Gingium.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the Eat, Sleep, Race podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Welcome to the Gingnasium.
Thank you. Yeah, you've been kind enough to host our podcast in here.
Yes.
It's nice traveling around. We got some nice ambiance and probably some mechanics going on very soon in the background.
Yeah, it's a functioning shop, as we were pointing out earlier.
All right. So, Caleb, tell the people, if they don't already know, give me a little bit of background on who you are and like kind of how you got into cars.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. How far back do you want me to go? That's the question.
Okay. Well, so let's start here. So I know you were doing YouTube for a little while.
Been doing it for a long while.
Right. Before you got into the automotive stuff, though, you were doing gaming.
Yes.
So, I mean, my first question to you would be like, what made you want to start doing those videos?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, was it just for fun? Was it because you wanted to be a YouTuber? Did you just want to showcase your gaming? Like, what was the drive behind that?
Sure. I 100% wanted to be a YouTuber when I was a kid. Yeah, I grew up, I used to be a huge gamer, obviously, and I grew up watching YouTubers like VicStar123. Ever heard of him?
No.
He's a Minecraft YouTuber. So, a little cringy, but I watched him. I watched, L.E.A. You ever heard of him?
Nope.
That's funny. You never probably watched any gaming YouTubing.
No, I'm not a big gamer.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't watch
YouTube
anymore,
content. Either. When I started watching YouTube content, you were one of, like, the YouTubers that I started watching.
Okay. Well, yeah, so I grew up watching those guys, and, you know, they had the dream life of playing video games all day. And everyone smiled. They showed like their cool car. They all had lots of money.
Oh. Yeah, it's okay. Oops.
So yeah, I wanted to be a YouTuber when I grew up. So I started making videos when I was in middle school. First video was in 2011. It was a Skyrim video. Still my favorite game. And yeah, it kind of started as fun, but also like I was trying to build a following. Did it for a few years just kind of as fun, not taking it seriously, not really trying too hard to build an audience, just making videos.
Mm-hmm.
Like played Call of Duty, played Skyrim, played just pretty much every game in existence. And I would upload my cringy gameplay to the internet. Eventually I realized it wasn't working. Like
right.
I wasn't really gaining an audience because I think the main issue was that I was uploading too big of a variety of content. Like, mm-hmm. someone's not going to want to subscribe to someone who plays a bunch of different genres of games, or at least not someone who's not good at any of those things. Like, at least if I stuck to one thing, people could enjoy that content, but just sucking at all these games was not something that people were going to want to watch. So I decided to start doing car gaming. I had always liked cars growing up. I had probably like 300 Hot Wheels. So I've always been into cars, and I realized that there was kind of a gap in the market where not a whole lot of people were playing car racing games.
Uh-huh.
Things like, this is like right after Forza Horizon 1 came out, so it was a pretty long time ago. But yeah, nobody was playing Forza, really. Nobody was playing The Crew, all those types of games. And then so I started making those types of videos.
Nice.
I did that for... I don't remember the exact timeline anymore, but a few years yet again. And that's when I kind of hit my first fast growth of subscribers and viewers. I started trickling in a weekly in real life car video. So like I would upload every single day. Most of it was, or 6 days of the week, it would be just a racing game. One day a week, it would be me installing a part on a car.
Right.
Started with my Toyota Corolla. I plastic dipped the wheels. Fixed the dent in the bumper. Then it elevated to a Ford Focus ZX3 manual.
Nice.
Yeah. Had a bad transmission, you know, grinded in every gear. It was terrible. But I yet again, plastic dipped the wheels, sticker bombed the dash, neochrome shift knob, and a 12-inch subwoofer.
Nice.
Sold that. And then after that is when I got my Miata. So that was my first like real car. I started to grow up a little bit. I actually did coilovers, wheels, brakes, you know, seats, which are actually right over there.
I want to pause you real quick.
I've been ranting.
No, you're good. Let's backtrack a little. So at what point when you started doing like the car content on your page, did you decide, okay, I'm going to pull away from gaming and just go strictly into the car stuff?
Okay. So I was kind of getting there. I was doing this 6 days a week, gaming, one day a week, cars.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, you know, I thought it would be the life to play a video game every day and make a video about it. It gets boring.
Yeah.
It gets boring. Gaming, even nowadays, I don't game very much because it's not as fun. But yeah, so I was just getting bored of playing Forza every single day.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. And since I was doing this real life car stuff and those videos were doing just as good as my gaming stuff,
mm-mm,
I started to do, you know, two days a week, it would be a real life car. And then eventually I just was like, screw it. I don't want to make any gaming videos. We're doing only car stuff. And there was definitely a moment where I was like, all right, this is it. Like, we're switching over. I didn't like slowly transition forever.
It was like a hard.
Yeah, it was a hard cut. And I made a video. I was like, I'm quitting, you know, like some clickbait title. But it was just telling my viewers that I was stopping gaming. And at first I had a lot of backlash because most of my viewers were there for the gaming.
Right. All your subscribers up to that point subscribed for that type of
exactly
content.
But it was at least in the same genre, you know, from car gaming to real life car stuff.
Well, I feel like it was a little bit of a transition because you went from playing all these different types of games to then now you're showcasing Forza and other car games, and then now it's like real life cars.
So yeah,
that,
I mean,
that's kind of like a subtle transition.
It made sense, but some people don't want to watch real life stuff. They want to just watch the game, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, 1,000 horsepower drag build on Forza versus
actual car.
Yeah, or I didn't have the budget to do a 1,000 horsepower drag build. I was sticker bombing my dash and, you know, that kind of stuff. So
actually, I creeped your YouTube last night.
Trying
to put some notes for this.
You can dig pretty deep and find some cringy stuff.
Oh, no, it was super easy. I just went on YouTube and I clicked start for view from oldest. And I was like, okay, when does the car stuff start? So that video you just mentioned, sticker bombing the dash, mm-hmm, was that your first like viral video that got like the most views?
Is it viral?
It has a lot of views.
Really?
I think it's at 170,000 plus. Versus like there's another one that's related to the Focus. It was at like 10,000 that I was viewing. So I was curious if like that's new viewership or old viewership.
I think that's over the years viewership. I don't remember it blowing up, but I don't necessarily have that good of a memory.
Okay. Yeah, I was curious if like, because it kind of seems, you know, from the outside perspective looking in, it kind of seems like it was gaming, and then like a couple car videos, then that one and the previous one looked like they did pretty good, and then like it quickly transitions off into.
I mean, there was definitely like the gaming videos started to do worse in views, and the real life videos started to do better in views. So there was like a incentive business wise to switch as well.
Right. Okay. All right. So the Ford Focus, you know, you sold that
Fred.
Yeah. Yes. Fred, the Focus. So you sold the Focus and then you got your first Miata.
Yep.
You know, give me a rundown of like all the things you did to that car.
Sure.
And, you know, this is just my opinion. I feel like you're most well known because of the work you did with the Miata. Because at least that's how I found you. And like a lot, you know, I also have a Miata and all my Miata friends all follow you.
Yeah.
And like,
I'm definitely known as a Miata guy for sure. There's a lot of Miata guys on YouTube, but I'm one of them. So yeah, it started as basic stuff as a noob. This is my first time actually working on a car, because like I said, I just did silly cosmetics on my other cars.
Uh-huh.
Started with, you know, knockoff wheels, eBay coilovers, eBay seats. It definitely started as a cheap, still kind of poorly modified car. But eventually I saved up for a turbo kit. So I was like, my first big modification was a Flying Miata turbo kit on my little 1.6 Miata. I remember I saved up for like a year. I bought it. Once I got it, you know, it came in this big package and it had an instruction manual that was like 30 pages long. I took it to college with me, and in between my classes, I was reading the instruction manual, trying to make sure I installed it right and not screwed it up.
Right.
So I did that, and the car pretty much chilled like that for a while, just turbo Miata, made good power, it was like 220 wheel, used it as a daily driver, did some track days, and, you know, I put different wheels on it and changed things up here and there, but kind of stayed like that for a while. Eventually, I put a built motor in, which is now what it's got. It's got a built 1.6, so it is still the 1.6 liter. It's high compression, but still turbocharged, and it makes like 380-ish to the wheels, 350 to the wheels, somewhere around there, and on the 85, and that's how it is now.
Question, why high compression with the turbo?
I was hoping you were going to ask me this.
I feel like it's usually the opposite now.
Yeah, so high compression will always make more horsepower than lower compression. The problem about when you're adding high compression and a turbo is that you're really increasing the cylinder pressure, and that will lead to detonation. So in order to combat that, you have to run a better fuel. So like, you can't run that engine, that high compression turbo engine, on 93. It'll just knock and just won't work. So I have to only run E85. So the reason why people don't do high compression and turbo is because they want to stay on 93. They want to be able to get gas at any pump station.
Right.
And it's also, you have to be careful, more careful tuning it. If you have a crappy tuner, or if the tuner just doesn't want to do it, then you should do it. But high compression turbo makes more horsepower. Fortunately, I'm stuck on E85. So not as big of a problem when you live in the Midwest and there's corn everywhere. A little bit worse in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But it's whatever.
Would you say Molly is the car that put you on the map, or do you think it's something later down the line?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've had good builds throughout my YouTube career. Molly was definitely one of them, but if I only just stuck with Molly, I wouldn't have gotten anywhere, you know. I remember when I first got my Subaru, I distinctly remember I got my Subaru WRX. And that, like, the announcement video did really well, and I hit 100K.
Oh, wow.
In that video. And I had a bunch of these YouTubers I looked up to commented on it and was like, congratulations. And like, that was a really cool moment that I remember. I had builds that did well that I regret. Like, I had a Toyota Previa.
What?
Yeah. I had a Toyota Previa.
I had no idea about that one.
I know the build that put me on the map, or that did the best for my channel.
Okay.
The Rally Miata.
All right. So let's talk about that a little bit. So you already had Molly. That was your first Miata.
Yeah. So at this point, I had Molly and my WRX wagon.
Okay. So what is the Rally Miata? Let's talk about how it started out, what you did to it. Because if I'm not mistaken, that one you did a supercharger on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Initially, it was a 1.8, or it was also
no,
1.6.
It was all the 1.6.
So the 1.6 with a supercharger.
Yes.
And then you said, okay, I'm going to turn it into an off-roading midget. You tell me.
Yeah,
tell us
So it happened the other way. I lifted it first, and that was the whole reason why I got it. I had saw that a company made a lift kit for them, and there was like one or two other people on Instagram that had a lifted Miata, but nobody on YouTube. So I was like, oh, this would be cool. Miata's really popular. No one's lifted one on YouTube. Let's lift it and just like go on off-rail trails with it.
Right.
So I bought this lift kit. It was like 150. It was like a cheap lift kit, just kind of like a little spacer.
Right.
Lifted it, put 30-inch tires on it, you know, had to chop like a huge chunk of the quarter panel off to fit it.
Right.
And it just looked like this monstrosity of a Miata. And I think the first video got like 100,000, 200,000 views. which for me in that day was like huge.
Right.
And so that got me really popular. I was known as the Lift a Miata guy for a while, which I was not the first one to do it. I want to make sure that's clear. But on YouTube, I think I was one of the first people.
Yeah. I feel like since you've done yours, I'm not going to say people have stemmed from it, but I've seen a few since.
It definitely got popular.
I've seen a few
of
them, yeah.
I was ahead of the curve. And that's a lot of what YouTube is just being ahead of the curve for everything.
Well, so let's talk about what you did different than what any other lifted Miata probably has ever had done to it. You know, we mentioned the supercharger a little while ago, but you did a lot of work to that car.
Yes.
So let's talk about the motor you swapped into it.
Okay.
You know, you did a lot of custom fabrication on it.
Yeah, so this was like a whole other evolution, kind of like how I got bored of gaming and then transitioned to real life car stuff. I eventually was kind of getting bored of just doing basic bolt-on things, and I wanted to kind of build my own stuff. I've always been a guy who likes to build stuff, especially from scratch. So I wanted to get into fabrication. I had toyed with this idea of doing this engine swap, which was a EJ20. So that's a Subaru WRX engine with the all-wheel drive transmission and drivetrain into that lifted Miata. Because everyone is like, oh, you know, as I did the original build, it's like, oh, it's two-wheel drive, it's, you know, pointless, or, you know, why are you lifting it, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, imagine if I could make it all-wheel drive.
Right.
It'd be so cool. But
and practical.
And practical, sure. But at that time, I didn't know how to do that, and I would have had to pay a fabricator. I got it quoted, it was like $20,000 or something, insane. And I did not have that money. So I eventually kind of just started fabricating myself. Started with really jank things. That's actually why I got that Toyota Previa. Mm-hmm. It was like my first time building an exhaust on a car and doing some fabrication stuff.
You bought it for that?
Like, yeah.
With the intention of practicing like your fabrication skills?
Yeah, I mean, I had this all-wheel drive Miata idea for 4 years, 3 years, a long time before I actually did it.
Okay.
But I just didn't think it was ever going to happen.
Yeah.
But then I was like, all right, actually, I can probably do this myself eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I practiced on different builds and eventually got confident enough where took out the Miata engine, chopped the front of the Miata off right at the firewall, built a custom tube chassis to pretty much just accept a WRX subframe and engine. So it was essentially a WRX with a Miata body.
Right.
But it's not quite as simple as like a body swap with like a body on frame vehicle.
Yeah. Because you made everything custom.
Like, made everything custom.
It was tubular.
What was that?
It was like tubular front.
Yeah. Tubular front. But it did still use the Miata rear suspension. And it was still all like an integrated chassis. It wasn't just like a body bolted onto an old frame.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I built that and birthed the all-wheel drive Rally Miata.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love everything about that car. It's
it was very cool. I built it a little bit too race car. Like I wanted a race car, and then it was just pretty much annoying to drive on the street.
Why is that? What made it annoying?
Well, the cage was super intense, so it was like getting in and out of it was a whole headache. Had harnesses. It had the like a Kirky seat, like the drag racing, like just straight aluminum.
No
seat.
Cushion, no nothing.
It did have a cushion, but still, it was not very comfortable. It dumped the exhaust. It was a straight pipe just right under the cab, so it was obnoxiously loud. Had a burble tune on it, so it was bop, 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 bop.
And I mean, it is a Subaru.
It was cool. I liked it, but it was maybe not comfortable to drive on the street.
Mm-hmm.
So I had it for a good couple years. Spoiler, I sold it. Had it for a while. Did some rallycross events on it. And eventually sold it. The thing was, when I built it, I didn't do any research about actual rally, stage rally.
Yeah.
Because that's what I wanted to do with it. Mm-hmm. Turns out stage rally is a very strict rule set. Like, you can't just build someone's fast and show up and race it.
So let me guess, you didn't pass tech inspection.
Well, I didn't even try.
Or
I
mean, have any
I built the entire thing and I was like, you know what? All right, I think it's time to do a stage rally. Look it up. Oh no, I can't do any of this.
No custom built Subaru Miata.
Unfortunately not. You can put a Ferrari engine in a Subaru, but you can't do what I did.
What? That's interesting.
Have you seen the Ferrari swap Subaru?
No,
rally
I haven't
car?
Seen that.
Oh, it's very cool.
That's interesting.
Some guy found like a little loophole in a, not even a loophole, but he found a rule that he could exploit, and he put a Ferrari engine in a WRX.
Wow.
It's very cool.
Gonna have to check that out.
But yeah, so I couldn't do stage rally, but I did do rally cross, which is like autocross.
Okay.
So it's like a small, it's kind of boring.
It's like off-road?
It's like off-road autocross.
Okay.
But it's like a grass field with cones.
All right. That's kind of interesting.
It's the opposite of stage rally. Like, stage rally is so cool. Just like, you know, ripping through the gears with trees flying by you.
Yeah.
Rally crosses, you're kind of puttering around in first or second around cones. So,
all right.
I mean, I sucked at it. So maybe that's partly why it was boring, but.
All right. So you learned on the Previa how to fabricate.
Yeah.
And then that led you to being able to successfully build the Rally Miata.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's talk about fabricating for a little bit.
Sure.
So how did you get into it? Like, what were some of the stages of that? Because, like, as I look around the shop, I see, like, a plasma cutter and, like, a full work table and your gas welder that's currently out of gas. And I walked in the other day, and you were building a custom turbo manifold for this car behind us,
yep. So
the Honda Accord.
Yeah.
So, like, how do you build up to that? Like, what did you start with, and how did you transition into what you're capable of
sure.
now?
Sure, yeah. Baby steps and lots of time and lots of failure. One of the first things I built was the hood scoop for the original Rally Miata when it had the supercharger, because I wanted to be different yet again, and I did a top-mounted intercooler on that thing, and so I had to build a hood scoop. Didn't know how to weld, so I riveted together just these sheets of metal. It was pretty jank, but it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Then I bought a Harbor Freight flux core welder. Which was like
it's like $100 one.
Yeah, it's like the lowest of the low. And then I remade the hood scoop, but I welded it. I don't remember exactly all the little steps after that, but it's kind of like buying the next tool, getting good with that tool, and then upgrading to the next level.
Okay.
So, you know, you start with a flux core welder, practice welding with that. I mean, you can build an exhaust with a flux core welder. You could be a little weird, but you could build like a tube chassis even with a flux cord welder. But then you get a MIG welder, and once you're good with the MIG welder, you get a TIG welder, and then the sky's
the limit. So you just been like little by little upgrading to learn the next,
exactly.
the next tool.
It's really like there was something I wanted to do, and in order to do it, I had to get a new tool and a new skill.
Okay.
So like I made a mild steel exhaust. Well, that's fine, but I want a stainless steel exhaust. Well, you kind of have to TIG weld a stainless steel exhaust.
Yeah.
So you have to get a TIG welder. You got to learn how to TIG weld. TIG welding stainless, in my opinion, sucks. So then you got to learn that. And then, I want to turbo this car. Well, then I'm going to have to be able to weld aluminum for the intercooler piping. Well, then you have to learn AC-DC welding. Et cetera, et cetera. Pretty
just
much.
Carries on.
Yeah.
So like, how did you learn all of it throughout it? Were you just like watching YouTube videos? Or did you have any type of guidance?
Honestly, I didn't even do as much research as I should have. I have a bad habit of just diving into something and I'm gonna figure it out.
Yeah.
So I kind of would do a little bit of research on how to do this, like maybe how to use the tool, like how to set it up, and then just kind of start. And I would usually suck for a while and then eventually kind of figure it out. I'm still not like, I'm not a really good welder. I'm not a really good roll cage builder, but it's good enough for me and good enough for videos, and it's safe,
right.
It works, it's reliable, all those things. You know, it's not going to win a SEMA show award, but that's okay.
I mean, I don't know, man. Looking at the
from
drift,
here, it looks probably
truck.
Good. don't look too close.
No,
it
man,
works.
You do a lot of cool stuff, you know, and I kind of think the same way when I'm working on my own stuff. I'm like, it's good enough for me as long as, like, don't ask me to work on somebody else's car or, like, you know, build for somebody else.
Yeah, definitely.
Is that something you do? Do you work on anybody else's cars or just your own stuff?
Yeah, just my own stuff. I don't think I'd be good enough. Or depends on how picky the person is, but.
Yeah. I feel like it could be too much of a liability, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I know as soon as you get customers into the mix, there's insurance and liability and all sorts of stuff. I don't ever want to have to mess with.
Let's talk about some of your builds. What would you say is, like, I don't know, what's your favorite build that you've ever
question.
Built?
Some would say this one right here. Some would say, I don't know why I said it.
It's like, who are
part
some?
Of me would want to say this one right here. Part of me would want to say the Rally Miata. Part of me would want to say Mali, which is still the one out there.
Right.
I like each build for a different reason. You know, I do really like the drift truck. That's one of my favorite. But also like the Accord is one of my favorite, just to actually drive and enjoy on the street, you know?
Mm-mm.
So yeah, I don't know. That's not the answer you're looking for, but
no, that's okay.
Like, I like them all. There's ones I don't like.
I was going to say,
I can tell you that.
That's my next question. Okay. What are some of the worst builds that you've had, and like some of the headaches
disasters
that have come along with them?
Okay. First one was that Previa.
Okay. What was the issue with the Previa?
Well, the issue was I was so excited about it that I bought the crappiest one. It was like the first one I found on Facebook. This is so sketchy. We drove to Milwaukee, bad neighborhood. It's this rundown house, this Previa sitting outside, like a rust pile underneath the Previa, I swear. I test drive the thing, it barely drives. And I just ignored all those issues and I was like, yes, I want it. Well, I get it back to the shop and yeah, it's just like a rusty mess, just totally terrible.
If you don't mind me asking, how much was that car?
$1,000.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's not like
I probably would have done the same thing.
I know.
Just been like, I'll take it.
I think a lot of my problems have come from me getting excited about something and then just buying the first field car I look at.
Yeah.
I definitely have that problem. So that was one of them. That was just because it was rusty. I had an FCR X7, which was a very cool car.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was red? Or
inside was red.
No,
it was black.
The Eclipse was red.
The Eclipse was red. That's going to be on this list.
We'll get to that. I have a whole, whole thing about that.
I'll end with that, and then we can transfer there. But
okay.
Yeah, so the RX-7 was really cool. I had this. I pretty much wanted. So I bought an NA, naturally aspirated RX-7, and I wanted to turbo 2 swap it.
Okay.
That's like, imagine putting an ST motor in like a non-ST Focus or something.
Yeah. That's
essentially what I wanted to do. Well, I had gotten a quote for a Turbo 2 engine from this importer, went to go pick it up, and then the guy like tripled the price on me.
What?
So I didn't end up buying it.
Why?
I don't know. There was like miscommunication. Like we had agreed, but then I had technically agreed with a guy who lived overseas. I don't know. I think he was just trying to scam me, essentially.
Oh, damn. That sucks.
But like, I'm a 19-year-old kid who doesn't really know what he's doing.
Yeah.
So I just kind of left, and I ended up just putting the NA motor back in. So like I made a video like Turbo 2 swapping my RX-7. Psych, I can't afford the engine. Put the old one back in.
Got
and
screwed
so,
on the price.
Yeah. So that was like kind of embarrassing, just in a content stance, because I was like, I promised all these things and I did not deliver. So that sucked in that way. I don't think. Oh, here's another one. One of my subscribers gave me a free car.
Oh, yeah, I saw
this
that.
This guy's a goat. Love him. It was an awesome car. He pretty much gave me, it was an EK Civic with a B18 engine that was built, had like forged internals.
Yeah.
And I just had to put it together. So I put it together. Well, I put the wastegate, the vacuum line going onto the wastegate wrong. So wastegates have two ports, like a top port and a bottom port.
Uh-huh.
One, if you feed boost into it, it will open the wastegate. The other, if you feed boost into it, it'll keep the wastegate closed. And the tuner that was tuning it at that time did not set up any safeties before trying to do a pull. So it wasn't all my fault, but definitely the root cause was my fault.
You blew it up.
And first pull, I'm watching. And, you know, the boost hits.
You weren't even driving? Or
no,
you were driving?
No, I'm just watching from the outside.
Oh, wow.
Boost hits. I'm like, oh, damn. And then I see on a catch can, oil starts pouring out of it. And I'm like, oh, this is not good. And then pop. Totally blew up the engine. We pulled the head in like an hour. The cylinder walls, because it was still open deck.
Right.
Cylinder walls were all like cracked open. It was literally like a balloon that had just popped. So I felt so bad because this subscriber had given me this car for free, with just the promise that I'd make content with it.
Right.
And I blew it up. And I didn't have enough money at that time
to fix it.
So I just sold it and bought an LS400. So that was another embarrassing moment and a headache.
Have you spoken to him about it?
Yeah. He forgave me. I mean, obviously I didn't do it on purpose, but
right,
it doesn't mean I didn't feel bad about it. I'm trying to think other headaches.
I mean, even with the cars that you did like, were there any headaches in the processes? I'm sure there were.
Yeah, I mean, there's always headaches, like, for sure.
You tried welding a cage and then come to find out it like randomly fell apart or something.
Nothing like that.
I mean, not like that extreme.
Thankfully,
but...
nothing like that. I don't think I've ever had like a part fail that I've built. I think the next story is the Eclipse. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, let's talk about the Eclipse.
Okay. All right. So this is right after I moved to Georgia. So I used to live in Chicago, had a big shop there, and I, without any doing research, another common problem I do, I moved to Georgia, and that's where we are now. But I did not secure a shop before I moved to Georgia.
Do you mind if I ask what made you want to move to Georgia?
Sure. Mostly it was the weather, and especially with content making, I couldn't do anything with my cars for like 4 or 5 months out of the year.
Because the winter.
Because snow and salt, and also all the cars up there are rusty. You have to pay a premium to get a non-rusty car.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a nightmare. So that was, you know, the main reason. So I moved down here, didn't have a shop. It took me like 6 months to find a shop.
Damn.
Yeah, so that was a real struggle for content creation because I was, suddenly I had a Lyft. I went from having a Lyft and a shop to working on Jack and Jack stands in my house. And also, I didn't have 220, so I couldn't weld. Couldn't do any fabrication. So I needed a build to be able to do that with. So me and my friend Hunter flew and bought an Eclipse sight unseen for, I want to say it was $1,500.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was a second-gen Eclipse. No, it was a first-gen Eclipse. Sorry. So first-gen Eclipse. It was the GST, so it was the turbo model, but not the all-drive turbo
front
model.
Front-wheel drive. Yeah.
4G63. It ran and drove when I bought it, but it had a bent wheel, bent control arm, and it misfired every once in a while. So we go, we buy it, drive it to my friend's house, which is, that's how I found the vehicle. My friend found it on his Craigslist,
like
or whatever.
His local Craigslist.
Yeah, and then he sent it to me, and I was like, screw it, let's do this.
Yeah.
So the perfect little build I could build at my house. Well, we go back to my friend's house. We fix the wheel, put new, like, used wheels on it, fix all the basic stuff on it. We drive it from St. Louis back to Atlanta, and on the way, it just starts overheating for no reason. So it overheats. We pull over. We put, you know, new coolant in it. Like, wow, why is the coolant low?
Yeah.
Keep driving. Doesn't overheat for a while. Eventually, it overheats. Pull over. Try to bleed the coolant. Try to put a new thermostat in it.
Yeah.
Eventually.
On the side of the road?
Yeah. Like. I mean, we would usually limp it to a parts store.
Yeah.
Thankfully, that drive is pretty populated with stuff. So
yeah.
We never had to drive too far. But there was definitely, I remember some moments where it's like, the
pushing the limit.
Yeah, the coolant gauge is pegged. And you're like, oh, please, just one more mile. Hold
there. Just neutral coasted the rest of the way.
Yeah, like, I definitely remember, like, okay, all right, we're in the parking lot. Yeah. Like
but,
that
but
one
like,
10
leave,
seconds.
Leave the accessory on for the fan kind of thing. Like,
yeah. Well, eventually we realized every time we pull over, it's low on coolant. Where's the coolant going?
Yeah.
It had a blown head gasket. So we did end up making it back. Thankfully, when the sun set, like, it didn't have a super blown head gasket. It was just slightly blown.
Just bad enough.
Yeah. So, like, when you were driving it fast on the highway, it would overheat. And then as soon as it overheated, it would puke the coolant out. And then you're screwed.
Right.
But if you babied it, it would be fine. So once the sun set, the temperature dropped, we kind of babied it all the way there, and we made it. Mm-hmm. I remember when we pulled into Hunter's house, it was overheating, and I could hear the water boiling in the radiator. I was like,
that's not
fun. So that's where the headaches start on this thing. I fixed the head gasket in my driveway, which was fun. It was a learning experience, the first head gasket I ever did. Had to replace the transmission because that started grinding. Then it blew another head gasket. Well, because it turns out homie had, like, definitely blown the head gasket, then kind of cobbled it together where it would run enough.
Yeah.
And then kind of sold it off. But I don't know if he did it or the previous owner did it. The block had a gash in it. So it wasn't as simple as just like pulling the head off and machining the head. Because that's what I did the first time. The actual block needed to be machined.
Okay.
So it was kind of like the engine was essentially toast.
So did you end up machining it, or you just got a new motor?
No. So what ended up happening is I decided to rear engine swap it.
And so, this is where the problem starts.
Yeah. So when it blew the second head gasket is when I had just gotten this shop. And I wanted to do a fabrication build because I've been itching to do another fabrication build.
Right.
And I thought it would be really cool to turn this little front wheel drive 90s car into a rear wheel drive, cool rear engine 90s car.
Right.
So pretty much I embarked on this crazy fabrication mission of essentially taking kind of like what I did on the Rally Miata, where I put a subframe into
getting a little distracted.
Built a tube chassis around fitting a factory subframe. Yeah. I essentially did that, but instead of getting it from a different car, I really just moved the front subframe and engine and everything and put it in the back.
Okay.
And built a chassis around it. So I did that, but then,
how
detailed do you want me to get? Because there's so many issues on this thing.
We can run, man. As long as the cameras are still running, I'll check them out in a bit.
Well, the fabrication part went great. That was fine. So I knew I had this blown up engine, or this engine that essentially needed to have a block machined.
Right.
I was really just going to rebuild it. Well, I take the oil pan off. It is carnage. Someone just like chucked a grenade down that engine.
Oh my god!
Like there's metal everywhere. There's silicone like all gunked up in the pickup tube. Like whoever put this thing together did not know what they were doing. This was a not taken care of engine. I don't know how it made it back from St. Louis. Had a blown head gasket with all this stuff coming in the bottom end. Like
yeah.
So that engine was toast. Needed a new crank. Needed to do everything. So instead of rebuilding it, I was like, okay. I'm just going to buy a Facebook Marketplace engine.
Yeah.
Drove, found a DSM shop in Tennessee. I was selling a used one.
Okay.
Drove, bought that. He did let me know, like, listen, I know it runs, but I don't know what the condition of it is. I was like, okay, I'll roll the dice, take my chances.
Did you pull it apart to, like,
we kind of checked everything. It looked fine.
Okay.
But we put it in, and it was knocking. Damn. Very, very minorly. It was only once it warmed up and at idle, you could kind of hear it knock every once in a while.
Uh-huh.
To be honest, it probably would have been fine, but I didn't want to risk it because this was my first giveaway car too, which was a whole nother headache.
Ooh.
Don't do a giveaway car on a super custom fabricated thing. That was a terrible idea. But so this is now the third engine, essentially. That's toast. Okay, well, I reach out to this DSM shop. He's like, let me build you a fresh motor. You
know, okay.
Here's the list of things that you'll need. This is what it will cost. I'll bill it to you. You can pick it up next weekend.
That sounds
it's like
promising.
Perfect. Yeah, it sounds awesome. Finally, all my headaches are gone.
Yeah.
I go to pick up this engine. I don't really look at it because I just trust homie. And it was just the bottom end because I had a good head. So bring it back home. Take the tape off that was covering the deck. And I notice the pistons don't look like they quite fit in the engine. And, you know, a piston's supposed to be pretty tight in the cylinder walls.
Right.
Like, pretty tight clearances. You could literally move the piston, like, left and right, like, clink, 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 clink. So I'm actually, I'm like, what's up with this? He's like, oh, I don't know. It should be fine. Just put it together and run it. I was like, this is not right. So I pull a piston out. Turned out, homie put 85 millimeter pistons, so like stock bore pistons, in a bored out block.
So this
thing would never have ran.
So, like, technically, it was the right size, but because it was bored out, it was the wrong size.
I mean, for that engine, it was not the right size.
Right.
If it would have been a factory engine block, sure, it would have fit. But,
yeah.
You know, when you build an engine, you're supposed to measure the piston, the wall clearance. You're supposed to measure all these things if you want it to be a reliable engine.
Right.
He clearly did not. He clearly thought, like, oh, I can just throw this together in an hour, give it to the guy, and it'll be fine.
Right.
So, screw that guy, but that was now my fourth engine. So, on the fifth engine, I was like, I'm doing it myself. No one else is touching this thing. So, I bought a new block. I think I had enough good parts pretty much everywhere else where I kind of cobbled it together, but I built it myself. Mm-hmm. I measured the piston to wall clearances, you know, the bearing clearances, all that.
Yeah.
And then finally, it worked, and it was a good running and driving engine. We had some tuning difficulties because the turbo I put on it was too restrictive and then blah, 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 blah. Finally, first drive of the car after tuned, literally the first time I ever drove it on the street besides on a tuning session, driving down the road, guy on his phone texting, pulls out in front of me, totals the car. Burns down.
Wait, hold on. But backtrack just a little bit. We'll get to this. So, all right. So you got the motor and everything was set up.
Yeah.
What came first, the engine being done or the mounting and positioning and everything for the rear section of
so
the car?
So I had built the entire chassis.
Okay.
On with that dummy engine I had.
Okay. So you used that as kind of like a substitute.
Yeah.
For
exactly.
When you got the good motor and then you just dropped it.
Yeah. So it was running and driving with a stock tune.
Yeah.
On that first motor I bought used that knocked at idle.
Okay.
And then I had just bought the other motor that was poorly built, which I didn't even either put in. And then I finally built a motor for myself.
Okay. All right. So now we'll talk about the first drive.
Yeah. So,
which I remember you actually told me about it a little bit before the video release. Because I remember being here at the shop and I was like, where's the Eclipse? All right. So what happened on that drive?
I mean, this car nearly broke me with all these things, especially with like what I was going through with my life with trying to move and stuff. It was so stressful. I've just now recovered. But yeah, so first drive. Yeah, guy is texting and driving. I essentially have a green light, and there's some cars in the opposite turning lane that kind of cross your front traffic.
Uh-huh.
Well, like one or two cars go, and even those two cars like probably shouldn't have gone, but sure, I had to coast for a second to let them through.
Yeah.
Well, then the guy behind them, what I'm assuming happened is he's probably just, sitting at the light waiting for it to turn green. On his phone. Oh, notices, out of the corner of his eye, cars are going in front of him. So he just starts going, not realizing that he's actually
blowing the light.
Yeah, he's blowing the light. I mean, it's green, but he's got to yield to me because I've got the green straight and he's got a yellow flashing turn.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, he just pulls out and follows those other two cars. And at that point, I slammed on my brakes, but this thing didn't stop very well and just slid right into him. Now, it would not have been, it was totaled either way. But it would not have been a total loss, except for the fact that, when you put the engine in the back, where's the fuel tank going to go? It's going to go in the front. And I did not make any extra crash support for it. So that was definitely my fault and a learning lesson. But yeah, it pretty much pierced the fuel tank. And another learning lesson, the battery was right next to the fuel tank. So I'm sure that thing sparked. And I just remember like driving. I see the first two cars going. I'm like, oh, kind of screw you. And I see the third car going. I'm like, what are you doing? Laying on the horn, slam the brakes, lock up. And I know I'm going to hit them. And I kind of just do this with my hand on the horn. Very lucky I didn't have an airbag because my hand would have been gone or broken. As soon as I kind of come to after the crash, I see flames billowing up. And like they're already huge, like coming past the window. And so I get out as fast as I can, leave my phone in the car. Thankfully, I had my cameraman with me, and he grabbed the camera.
Uh-huh.
So that camera over there survived that crash, wherever it is. And I had a fire extinguisher in the car. And so I went to go and try to grab it. But it was the flames were to the point where like they were kind of coming up to the door. And I was like, oh, this is probably sketchy. I thought it was going to literally just explode. I guess fuel doesn't do that. It just burns. But... yeah, and it ended up just kind of walking away and watching the last 2 years of my life just burn down in front of me. And it was supposed to be delivered to its new owner that had won the giveaway in like a week. It was just, it was a nightmare. Yeah.
If you don't mind me asking what wound up happening with that, you just let him know?
I ended up like letting him know. And with the insurance money, I paid him. So
okay.
It ended up being like a win-win because it was definitely a liability to give that car to anyone.
Right.
And if something broke, it probably would have been a pain in the butt for him to fix it.
Yeah.
So
I mean, hey, and God forbid that accident had happened with him. You never know.
Yeah, I'm done if that happens. It was a blessing in disguise, but it was definitely very stressful and a terrible situation. But I learned a lot. That's what life's about, guys, learning things. So it was good for that. And now it's gone, and I'm so happy. But man, it drove so good because I actually took the time to like re-engineer the rear suspension. I worked with one of my Italian fans who works I can't say where he works, but he's an engineer. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
And he helped me actually engineer the suspension. So we like changed things by millimeters. Like I had to redo all the control arms and stuff. It was very cool. A lot of in-depth. It drove very nicely for one drive.
We spoke about best and worst cars. What about like what's the weirdest car you've ever built?
I don't know. I would say probably the Rally Miata.
Okay.
Maybe quirkiest or most different. I don't know if that consists of weird. Maybe the Previa was the weirdest because it was a lifted minivan and it is already an ugly car. It definitely looked very weird.
Or I don't know. I guess maybe most out of the box. I mean, because I know you've had the Delica.
Yes, forgot about that.
That's a pretty unique car in itself just to have here in the States.
True, but
you know.
The actual, I mean, the build is just a little camper van.
Just a little camper.
Yeah.
Or the school bus. You had the school bus.
Did have a school bus, which was also kind of ahead of the curve. That was one of my most successful series.
Oh, yeah.
I bought a short bus and I converted the RV. Oh man, speaking about nightmares, that thing was also a nightmare.
Yeah.
Blew the engine and trans.
Oh my gosh.
And I, for some reason, paid for both of them to be fixed instead of dumping it. So.
I mean, you eventually wound up selling it, right?
I did. Well, I traded it for the Delica, actually.
Oh yeah, okay, that's right. Yeah. That's where the Delica came.
But yeah, that thing was a pain, and it was cool. I guess it was cool because I bulletproofed, so it was a 6.0. I ended up bulletproofing it and then putting a big turbo on it. And it made like 1,000 pound feet of torque and would roll coal. And it was actually kind of fast. It was a school bus. So it was cool then, but that was after like 20 grand.
So we're going to talk about that because you just mentioned something. You like to turbocharge things.
I do like to turbocharge things.
I'm trying to think. I feel like you've added boost to almost every single build or some type of forced induction.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like my forced induction, that's for sure.
I mean, obviously, you turboed Molly, and then you had a supercharger on the Rally Miata.
Yep.
Your Fit was turbocharged.
Turbocharged my Fit. But
the drift truck's not turboed.
It's supercharged, though.
It's supercharged.
That's the forced
force induction.
Force induction.
You're turbocharging
the Accord.
The Accord. So, I mean, my question is, for starters, why? Like what makes you want to just add a turbo to everything?
Sure.
To make it faster or
yeah, there's a lot of things. One of the main things is because I love the process. Because it suits my fabrication skills perfectly. I really love doing like exhaust and intake work, and on a turbocharger, that's pretty much it. And when you know how to fabricate, it actually gets pretty affordable to turbocharge a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you make a manifold, then you make a downpipe, then you make the exhaust and the intercooler piping and the intake. I love doing that. So that's part of it. Of course, I like turbo noises and stuff too. I also like having things that are faster than when they're naturally aspirated. So those are obvious. I think the main thing is like the actual fabrication process. Because when you put a supercharger on something, you usually have some sort of machined or cast adapter. You can't really build that.
Right.
And then you just plop it on and then you use whatever exhaust you had. Mm-hmm. Sure, you can make an intake, but it's not a very in-depth fabrication process. Mm-hmm. Like I installed that supercharger on the 1UZ back there in like 10 minutes.
Wow.
But then this, I've been fabricating on it for a week and I've got probably another week and a half of fabrication to do.
Yeah.
So that's why I like turbo so much is the fabrication process is really, really fun.
Okay. So what's like... And you could like dumb it down super simple. We don't have to go too technical into it. But like you get a naturally aspirated car, start to finish. How would you turbocharge it without buying a kit? How would you turbocharge a car?
Okay. Yeah. So the biggest thing is how do you tune it? If you get a vehicle that you can tune the stock ECU, my goodness, that saves you so much time and headache. Things like the Miata where you have to put a standalone in it, it's annoying.
Yeah.
So you have to figure out tuning. You have to figure out fuel. Usually you just put bigger injectors in it. It takes 10 minutes. That's cool. Then you got to mount the turbo, obviously. So the exhaust comes out of the engine and has to go into the turbo. A lot of engines, you can buy cheap cast iron manifolds for them off of eBay. But those are actually high quality because they're cast iron. Mm-hmm. They're not going to crack or anything.
Right.
Avoid like the cheap tubular stuff because that stuff is... prone to failure.
Yeah.
So you usually get a manifold. Unfortunately, on things like V6s, where you have two different banks that have to come into one, that's a lot more work. Mm-hmm. But then you just buy stainless steel tubing. So the exhaust goes into the turbo. Then you have to have a downpipe to get the exhaust out of the turbo. You have to have a wastegate to control boost or the exhaust flow on the turbo. Then you got to get the air from the other side of the turbo out of the atmosphere, do an intercooler into the engine, and then you got to get oil in and out. Which, that sounds like a lot, but it's really pretty simple.
Yeah.
The main things are tuning and then figuring out how to actually build the kit. I wouldn't necessarily recommend someone trying to do like a V6 for their first DIY turbo.
Uh-huh.
Get a four-cylinder, buy a cast iron manifold, build a downpipe. That's definitely feasible. And then, yeah, kind of go from there.
Like a Honda or
Mazda. Yeah, Honda,
like
Mazdas.
Super simple to work on.
Maybe even like BMWs. I wanted a turbo like an E36 or something. But there's a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff that is easier than you think to turbo. And there's a lot of companies that make turbo kits for very niche vehicles.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think about like the cheap turbo kits you find on like eBay and stuff like that?
I think they're fine. The problem is that the turbo quality is usually pretty terrible. And so it's super laggy, makes way less power, and is way less reliable. Like most of those turbos just blow an oil seal and then start blowing out blue smoke in a couple of thousand miles.
So what would you say is the best way to get boost on a budget?
Best way to get boost on a budget is for sure buying a cast iron manifold, buying a good turbo. Pulsar is a great brand because it's cheap, but not cheap quality. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's not cheap. Like you can still spend $1,000 on a turbo.
Yeah.
But like a Garrett turbo is like three times that price.
Right.
So you can buy a quality, but not over budget turbo. And then either build your own downpipe or hopefully you can even find a kit, like a turbo kit. Like you could buy, for instance, a CX Racing turbo kit and just kind of ditch the turbo.
Right.
Because that's probably the worst part on that kit. Or you can find a company that makes a higher quality turbo kit and then hopefully just buy bits and pieces.
Bits and pieces, yeah.
The most important part is have a good quality turbo. And if you don't want to spend a lot of money on a good quality, like fancy manifold, buy a cast iron manifold. And you can also buy used stuff. Especially like good
like
used turbos.
Secondhand turbo kits.
Yeah, like the turbo I put on the Fit was my Garrett turbo I had on the Miata that had been maxed out on the Miata for like 10,000 miles.
So you just
thing
repurposed
was heavily
it.
Abused and it worked great on the Fit.
And so, like, for the Fit, you did your own custom manifold and all that stuff for
I bought a log manifold, which just bolted the turbo right up, and then I made my own downpipe and made my own intercooler piping.
We kind of briefly touched on it a little bit earlier, but, like, what are some of the tools that helped bring your fabrication to the next level?
Sure, yeah. started with a MIG welder. That was like a big major step. Really, actually, the most major step is your first TIG welder. Because once you get a TIG welder, especially if it's AC-DC, you can do anything. But then also, for a long time, I had a bench vise that was not bolted down. That was like a running joke on my channel. So I would like be making a bracket. I had to hold the vise down while the piece was in the vise and I was cutting it. So jank. So bolting in the vise went a long way. you can get a lot done with an angle grinder. You can pretty much build anything you want with an angle grinder and a drill. But if you really want to level up a plasma cutter table, they can be kind of pricey, but the amount of time I've saved with that plasma cutter table I have over there is immeasurable.
How so? Like, what are some of the things that you've been able to make with it?
It's all very simple stuff like brackets and mounts, but you like the thing that would take maybe an hour to make with an angle grinder and a drill, you know, you have to cut it out, you got to drill the hole, you got to bevel it so it looks nice, you sand it. Takes me 5 minutes to make because you draw it up on the computer and then you click a button and it goes psh, and it's all done.
Damn.
it is so nice. Now, that the company I have is Langmuir Systems, and they make a like an at-home DIY one, which is like $1,000, which is, you know, if you know anything about fabrication equipment, like a welder is $1,000. You know, a table is pretty expensive. Like $1,000 for a plasma table is not too bad. And it's small and can fit in your garage.
That's pretty cool.
So if you like fabricating, you know, there's stuff out there for you for sure. Tube bender for making roll cages. You know, there's some tools that you just need to do. I tried to make a roll cage with a Harbor Freight tube bender. Mm-hmm. I call it a tube kinker. Because all it does is like...
kinks them.
Yeah, it just does not actually bend them. It kinks them. So you need a good quality tube bender. One of the major things for building like exhaust and intakes is getting a good cut. Because if you say you just try to freehand it with an angle grinder and it's like wonky, when you butt it up to another one, there's big gaps and you have to fill.
Right.
This is not going to work. So getting like a cheap bandsaw even, where even if the cut's not perfectly perpendicular, it's at least straight.
Right.
That works really nicely. Getting a belt sander where you can flatten the cuts really, really helps. Little things like that. Like if somebody wanted to make their own turbo cap, I would say buy a TIG welder. You can buy a good TIG welder that does AC/DC for $700. Buy a Harbor Freight bandsaw and a little table off the internet. Uh-huh. That's exactly what I have over there. It's all right. Harbor Freight. Buy a Harbor Freight belt sander. You're good to go. With those four things, you can make a decent turbo kit. With the money that you spend, if you ever plan on like turboing more than one vehicle, invest in those four parts, and in the two turbo kits that you build, you'll save your money from buying an actual turbo kit kind of thing.
I'm just like secretly making notes.
Yeah, no, you're good.
I'm gonna send you a picture. Hey, Caleb, look what I got.
Seriously.
All right, let's talk motorsports. So, sure. You know, obviously you build some, I'd argue, pretty fast cars. Mm-hmm. You know, they're custom built to your specifications to do whatever you want to do with them. You know, you mentioned that you've done like the Rallycross and the Miata. Any other types of motorsports that you've dabbled into? Drag racing, drifting, time attack?
Sure. Yeah, I've done everything at least once. I've done some drag racing. I had a Volvo that I swapped. I've done a little track driving with my Fit and my Miata. That's pretty much it. Oh, no, I've done drifting, obviously, with the drift direction.
Yeah, I forgot. Out of sight, out of mind.
It's yeah, like exactly.
2 feet where from you.
I would not say I'm the best driver. I've always enjoyed driving, but making content of driving is difficult on YouTube, unless if you're really, really good at driving. People don't necessarily want to watch it.
Right.
People can enjoy the progression of you getting better,
mm-hmm.
but you have to have a large following that's willing to watch you suck for a while.
Yeah.
And a lot of people aren't willing to watch someone that just kind of is not very good at driving. So I have not admittedly done a whole lot of driving on my channel mm-hmm. or in my life. I do really like drifting. I think that's the most fun I have.
Right.
Or just like simple autocross kind of days are really fun too.
Okay. If you had to pick one, what would you say is like your more favorite motorsport?
Definitely drifting.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely drifting.
How is the Volvo the only car you've drag raced? Or have you taken...
It's the fastest car I've drag raced. I mean, I've drag raced my Miata, and I've technically drag raced this thing too. But I've never built a drag car, really. Even the Volvo was like a street car that I took to the drag strip.
Right.
I do really enjoy watching drag racing. And that is the one form of content that seems to do pretty good because it's very... numbers based.
Yeah.
You install the one part and your car goes a tenth of a second faster.
Yeah.
People like that. People like seeing, oh, this thing actually leads to performance.
Yeah.
Whereas like if you take your car to the track, you might install one part, but then you kind of suck at that track or
yeah.
you're not having a good day or something like that. And it's not as direct to the part to performance game.
For other motorsports you're talking
about. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And for drifting, it's obviously all just looking.
We went through the Eclipse story. Have you had any like oh shit moments, like scary moments in any of your cars or okay. or working on your cars, like in fabrication, like gears are spinning
right now. I'm wondering if you see some things and then you want to hear the backstory, or if you actually genuinely don't know about this stuff.
I mean, I've watched a decent amount of your content over the years. There's nothing specifically in the top of my head, but you know.
Okay, well, so I'd say my first thing is I accidentally built a pipe bomb.
Excuse me?
Kind of. I kind of accidentally built a pipe bomb. I was doing some welding and stuff on a solid axle, which is like, you know, the pumpkin case and then the two tubes. Well, turns out when you spray a bunch of flammable liquid into this container and then put it on fire, it blows up. So what had happened, it obviously had a bunch of gear oil and some brake fluid and stuff in it. And there's a little fire on the end of the tube where I was working on because I was welding and one of the things just kind of caught something fire. So I went to blow it out and I was like, well, I then blew the fire into that center part and went out both ends, shot a big fireball like 3 feet long. And my face was like 3 inches away from this fireball. It happened so fast, like I didn't even notice the fireball, but it was just like a huge explosion. I was like, whoa, what just happened? We watched back the clip. And it's like,
is it on your channel?
Yeah, it's on my channel. It's on my Instagram too. So that's why I was wondering if you had seen it.
I gotta go look for it now.
You know that dumb ways to die? I mean, that's, I used it for that, which was pretty funny. But yeah, it was like in two frames is what it took for the fireball to go boom and then gone. And my face was like right there. So that was definitely a close call. I've lit lots of things on fire, but nothing too crazy. What was the... Oh, I almost got arrested street racing once. That's probably the only other, like, crazy...
That's a question I have for you. So tell me that story.
So it was with the Volvo. This is actually one of the first times I met Hunter. We had road tripped the Volvo from Chicago down here to Atlanta. Because this is where Hunter lives, and he was a friend of mine, even though we had only met once. And he had a friend who was in the street racing scene. And since this thing was like a sleeper, it was like turbo LS swapped, but looked stock on the outside. We're like, oh, let's go street racing. That sounds fun. Great idea. So we show up to this, like we get an address. Show up to this address and, you know, it's in a dark business park. And you can tell it's been used for street racing because there's like, you know, all the black marks from the doing burnouts and stuff. We show up and there's maybe like six cars or so. In a parking lot full of people. And at this time, the Volvo had the fuel pump was going out. So the fuel pump was like, wee! So we pull up and it's a stock looking Volvo. And then the fuel pump is super loud. So everyone's like, oh shit, like looking at it as we drive by. Well, as soon as I pull up, like somebody asked like, hey, do you want to run it? I was like, screw it. Let's go. So I pull up to the line. I'm racing this Audi TT. Or not an Audi TT. It was an Audi S4 or something, like early 2000s. Like I think it was like the twin turbo 2.7 liter V6.
Sedan,
yeah.
Okay.
This is like the craziest thing that's ever. Like it felt like I was in the Fast and Furious movie. You know, like bunch of people crowded around, like people in flashlights with cameras. I guess they were live streaming it, and the guy who was live streaming it walks up to me. He's like, "How much money you want to put on it?" I was like, oh no, I don't want to bet on this. I don't want to bet on this. And then he lowered the camera. He's like, come on, just say something. Like, just pretend for the camera. And so I was like, oh yeah, blah, 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 blah. So then, you know, he walks back a couple steps and he's like, are you ready? And I start getting on the two-step. Are you ready? He starts getting on the two-step. You know, we launch. And for the first little bit, it's neck and neck. I got a really good launch, but then the car started breaking up. This was, okay, I didn't tell this part, but we had just finished the car the night before we drove it all the way down Chicago.
Oh my gosh.
So this is a completely untested car. But yeah, I ended up pulling ahead of him and I'm freaking out like, oh, this is so awesome. I just won my first street race. And then we get to the end of the road, we turn around, all we see are cops. And we're like, oh shit, what do we do? What do we do? So me and actually Hunter was in the car with me. We pull into the closest like business parking lot, turn off all the lights, shut off the car. And we're like, well, what do we do? Everyone ran that was back at the starting line. So we sat there for like 5 minutes. And what I also didn't say was we had came there with four people in the one car and we only had two people. So we didn't know where the other two people were. So we call them And they had ran and they were hiding under a semi truck somewhere in the business parking lot. So we go back to pick them up. But in order to pick them up, we have to drive past the cops. Nothing ended up happening, but it was like a very nerve-wracking moment, like driving by the cops. But I'm like, oh, it's a stock Volvo. It's just from a broken fuel pump.
Yeah.
If they knew anything about cars, they'd probably know it was one of the cars that was there to race, but maybe they didn't. Either way, we didn't get bothered and we got away with it. But we got this all on camera. It was on my YouTube channel. Like, it was the coolest thing that ever happened, straight out of a movie. Even though it, you know, the car was really not that fast. The race wasn't anything crazy, but it felt so cool in the moment. Definitely felt like, you know, something out of the movie for sure. Yeah, it was fun. Definitely like one of my best memories I'll remember for a long time.
Do you have any other oh shit moments? Like, I don't know, accidents or something breaking?
No,
or something
no,
like
thankfully
that?
No. I'm usually pretty safe. That was definitely the most crazy thing I've ever done. Like, I usually don't even like speed that much or hoon on the street. Mm-hmm. Don't really go street drifting at all. So yeah, that was definitely the craziest moment. And yeah, I don't think I've really had anything else happen. Thankfully, no crashes besides the Eclipse.
So let's talk about, you drive your cars. Like, you take them places and go to events and stuff like that.
Sure.
You know, I know that you've taken the Volvo to Bradenton Motorsports Park, which is a hike. I mean, you drove it there, right?
Yeah. So you want me to just jump right into it?
Yeah, yeah, sure. Jump right into it.
Well, so there was this road trip I just was telling you about, which was down to Atlanta.
From Chicago.
And then after this story, the next 2 days later, we drove it down to Bradenton and drag raced it there and then drove it all the way back. That was all. Okay, so at Bradenton, this is the same trip. At Bradenton, it finally blew that fuel pump.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, the one that was whining. On the track. Leaned out really bad. Thankfully, the engine didn't blow up.
Uh-huh.
But it was a night event, night race, and we were planning on driving all the way home.
Right after the race.
Right afterwards. 20-hour drive right after the race.
Oh, all the way back to Chicago.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Don't know why we thought that was a good idea. But now, I drove to Adam LZ's shop. He gave me a fuel pump. We fixed the fuel pump outside his shop. We left his shop at like 2 a.m. and drove it straight back. All the way to Chicago.
So
it was like 16. There was a 20-hour drive, and I drove like 16 of those hours. Closest I've ever come to falling asleep during a car.
You guys didn't think to like pit stop in Atlanta for a little bit?
I wanted to, but everyone else was like, "Oh, just to get home." Like, it was such a rough day because all the problems with the car and I have to fix it. We're just like, "Please get me home." But I was the one who drove most of the miles, so wasn't exactly fair there. But we made it back fine.
That's good.
Then another time, I had driven the car to Bradenton. From here, from Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
That's still an 8-hour drive. So
it's not the worst drive.
No, it's not the worst drive. But, I mean, on a 800 horsepower Volvo, it's pretty cool to, you know, drive it 8 hours one way just to go racing. And then I drove that same Volvo all the way to LA and back.
I was going to say, you recently did a cross-country trip in it.
Yeah. So that was a huge drive, and that was really fun.
What'd you bring it there for?
I was on this versus that.
On Hoonigan.
Hoonigan, yes, on Hoonigan. So yeah, that was cool, but it was a long drive. That was also like one of those moments where like, don't know if the car is going to make it. Don't really have enough tools to fix anything major.
Right.
Although I literally brought head gaskets with me. I brought a water pump. Like, I brought as much as I could fit in that car.
I mean, hey, it's a station wagon. Like,
yeah, I could fit a lot.
You could fit a lot of stuff in there.
That's why it was such a good road trip vehicle. But yeah, it was a, you know, 3 full 14-hour days of driving to get there. And then we took a scenic route through Vegas, saw the Grand Canyon, went to Moab, went to my friend in Colorado. So that was probably the coolest road trip I've ever been on.
That's awesome.
But it was definitely like, as we were driving, when we first embarked, I was like, man, is this the stupidest thing I've ever done? Like, driving this. It had been reliable, but, you know, like, it's a project car. Something could happen. And on the last day of the drive, it started misfiring really bad.
Oh,
and we just kind of sent it back and it made it there. So thankfully, LSs are pretty reliable.
Have you ever done any trips like that with any of the other builds that you've had?
I have not.
Molly or anything like that?
No. I definitely want to with this thing.
Yeah.
It's hard with Molly because it's on E85 and
yeah.
it only gets 200 miles a tank. What'd you say?
200 miles a tank?
Yeah, on 85. Okay. Like, max 200 miles a tank.
Oh, damn.
So you really have to, like, plan out your route to 85 stations, and sometimes 85 stations are out, so you get there and you're screwed.
Yeah.
So I've never done a road trip in that vehicle. Yeah, I mean, I drove the Rally Miata, like, 6 hours once for a road trip, but that's it. It was really just the Volvo that I road tripped, but I do definitely, I love that. Like, building a project car and taking it on a road trip is a really fun feeling, because it is kind of like a, well, I don't know if it's going to make it. I built this thing from the ground up. Let's see,
like,
what happens.
It's like an extra adventure with it.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
Do you get sentimental with any of your cars? Like,
I do sentimental. This is my problem that I've had to recently overcome. I get sentimentally attached to all my vehicles, and then I keep them, and I have too many vehicles, and I don't drive them, and I'm paying insurance on all of them, and I don't make videos on all of them. So, like, financially and for my YouTube business, it's like a terrible idea to keep all these vehicles.
Right.
But I do keep them. But I have recently gotten over that. That's why Rally Miata's gone, Volvo's gone. Those were, like, the only two I was really sentimentally attached to. But
yeah, but I mean, you got rid of a lot of the cars in your fleet. The Delica's gone. The Beat is gone.
Yep.
Not to your Sequoia's own fault. Gone. The Eclipse is gone. Yeah.
Sequoia's gone.
Sequoia's
gone.
That was your tow rig. So what are you towing with now?
Nothing.
Nothing?
I'm trying to get a new one. That one had, like, title issues. That was just annoying to deal with. So yeah. I was like, let me get rid of this thing.
So that was going to be one of my questions. Like, is it hard to let these cars go?
100%. Yeah, for sure. I, like, cried when I sold the Rally Miata, which sounds so stupid, but, you know, I've had that thing for so long, and I had done so much stuff to it, and
you had that for what, like, 8 years almost? Because you sold it this year, right?
I sold it last year. No, it might have been 2024.
I think it was, like, earlier on this year.
I think
year,
it might have been earlier this year, yeah. But I had bought it and probably had it for 5 or 6 years.
I thought it was longer than that.
No, I think I bought it in 2019 or 2018.
Yeah, I thought it was, like, 17.
No, because I graduated high school in 2016.
Okay.
And I didn't start making full-time YouTube until then.
Okay.
So, somewhere around there. But yeah, I mean, I still had it for a long time. And that was definitely, like I said, I think that was the vehicle that originally made my channel. Like, if I didn't have that vehicle, probably wouldn't be where I am today. So.
Oh, so you think it was the Rally Miata over, like, Molly?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because Molly wasn't anything different.
Mm-mm. It was just, like, another turbo.
Yeah, and the videos did fine, but the Rally Miata is what first really showed me that, like, this could be possible and, like, did well kind of thing.
Okay.
So
was that the build that, I don't know, kind of pushed you? Like, when you first started doing your YouTube channel, I mean, you're pretty young. I'd imagine, you know, still able to live at home and, you know, not really have to work as much. I mean, obviously, you need to make money to buy car parts. Mm-hmm. But, like, at what point did YouTube start becoming, like, more of a full-time thing? Like, okay, I'm only going to be doing YouTube. I don't need to worry about a day job or, like, something part-time or something like that.
Yeah, so I was lucky. I mentioned ahead of the curve. I started when I was in middle school.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though I didn't have a huge following, I still kind of knew how to do the YouTube game.
Yeah.
And had a following early on before YouTube really got big. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there's everyone and their brother and sister have a YouTube channel now.
Yeah.
If you have a
Gmail account, you have a YouTube account.
True, true, true.
And
but
honestly, you don't even need a YouTube account in order to watch on YouTube.
Yeah, that's true. I was thankful that I had started it really early. And even by the time I graduated high school, I had, like, almost 200,000 subscribers.
Mm-hmm. By the time you entered high school? Or what? By the time you
graduated high school.
Okay.
I had, like, 200,000 subscribers, and I was making a good amount of money off YouTube.
Oh, wow.
But I was doing gaming videos.
Yeah.
Which turns out is a way better financial decision than doing real life stuff. Being able to play a game every day, which has no overhead, and you can make a video every day versus having to buy parts and stuff.
Yeah.
But so I had been doing YouTube full time. I worked a little bit at Culver's, but I eventually quit because I was making more money off of YouTube than Culver's. I went to college for a year because I was like, I'm going to get a real job. But then after the year, I was like, what am I doing? Like, my dream is to be a YouTuber. I want to keep doing YouTube. Why am I spending money and wasting my time going to college? So I dropped out of college, and then that's when I really focused on doing YouTube full time, which was 2017.
How long do you see yourself doing YouTube for?
That's a great question now. you know, as you get older, you have more financial responsibilities. And I would say my YouTube channel probably hasn't quite grown as fast as I would have liked it to. So I've kind of told myself, we'll see what the next year has in store. These Hondas, I started working on Hondas a lot. I really like Hondas. And I started doing a little bit more basic fabrication, like turbo kits, that people relate to more. And the videos started doing better. So if that trend keeps on going and the channel does well enough for me to continue to support myself off YouTube, I'm going to do it forever. I really like doing it. But if I stop making money off of it, then I got to get a real job. Which now is when I regret not going to college. We'll see what happens.
I mean, I would argue that, I mean, how long has it been since you left college? I'd argue the YouTube has probably paid itself off.
It definitely has. And the memories and friends and stuff I've made with it are definitely valuable and worth it for sure.
You won't get that in a 9-to-5.
No, definitely not. I would probably be a much sadder, maybe wealthier, but much sadder person if I had a real job.
How does it feel knowing that all of this, the gin gymnasium, all your cars and everything has come like from your hard work from YouTube and wanting to do that?
It's something to get used to. I definitely have struggled with imposter syndrome, especially like when I first moved to Georgia and I didn't have a shop. I went to SEMA and I saw all these cool cars. I was like, what am I doing, man? Like, trying to think I could do this and stuff. But no, I mean, it's cool. It's kind of surreal when I sit here and look at all this. I wish I owned the building. Unfortunately, I don't have that, but it is, it's really awesome. I don't really know what else to say, but yeah.
Have you ever had any scary fan moments?
No, I have not had any scary fan moments, thankfully. I've had fans like show up at the shop and stuff, which is maybe a little weird, but whatever. I mean, it's cool. It is funny, like, as a YouTuber, I know when I'm about to get recognized in person, because, like, you kind of lock eyes with someone, and they're like, they do a little double take, and then they kind of, you can kind of tell they get a little nervous, at least if they're not super comfortable with social interaction.
Yeah.
But no, everyone I've met has always been really cool. No one's ever been a creep. I don't think I had any scary fan moments. Most people are pretty respectable.
Okay.
I think you have to be really popular to get the crazy people.
I mean, you mentioned somebody who came here one time.
Yeah, like... yeah, but he stumbled upon the shop.
Oh, that was by accident.
Yeah, it was by accident. Well, I mean, he purposely showed up at the door, but he was next door getting work done.
Okay.
So it's not like he was like, where's Gingium? And stuff like that.
All right. Well, Caleb, thank you for agreeing to be on the eSleep Race podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Where can people find you on social media and plug everything? YouTube channel, Facebook, TikTok.
Gingium is pretty much everything. And if I don't show up from Gingium, type in the Gingium, because sometimes people steal Gingium somehow. I don't know.
They beat you to it on the platform.
Yeah. Somebody actually on TikTok, I made a TikTok. I tried to make it as Gingium. Someone had taken it, so I made it as the Gingium. Mm-hmm. And then the guy who had Gingium tried to sell it to me. I was like, no, I don't care, bro.
It's probably one of those guys that does that on purpose. It's like, oh, let me take this person's name.
Yeah,
and, you know,
which is kind of terrible, but whatever.
It's like the guy that got the Google domain. Did you hear about that?
No.
This guy had the Google domain. He was just messing around on the site to like buy the domain. He bought google.com and Google very quickly fixed the problem, but they were like, as compensation for it, they paid him, like, if you turn Google into numbers, it's like 6,000 something, whatever it is. So they paid him that amount.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I think 6,000 and
it's not a Google
and 13 cents
okay
was like the conversion from the letters.
Oh, I see, like literally, like when you look it up. Okay,
but all right, if you guys like this episode, make sure to like, comment, share, subscribe. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, make sure you're following us. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you in the next one.